Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Hello and welcome to episode 160 of the Webcomic Beacon here at webcomicbeacon.com, and we are hosted on the Rampage Network, a webcomics hosting and community site at rampagenetwork.com. Today we are trying something a little bit different. We're using a service called Vocal, a Ustream alternative, and it's in beta, so, but we're giving it a shot since Penny Arcade and PvP were, you know, talking about it last week. But hey, I'll try it out, and so any feedback, if you can hear us, is well appreciated. You can send that to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. We'll be keeping our eyes on this, but right now there are no ads to pop up for now. Anyway, I'm Fess of TooManyThingsToList.com, and this week we have a crossover of programs between the Tropecast and the Webcomic Beacon core program. We do have Mark Savory of AutumnLake.com with us.
Well, hello there.
We have Tanya Higgins of the Webcomic Beacon with us.
Very nice. Hello.
We also have Jules Rivera of ValkyrieSquadron.com. More to come.
Ooh. Yo.
We also have... Hey, wait. Roscott, you're still here, aren't you?
I sure am.
Roscott, who hails from the host of the newscasts. Welcome to the show.
Well, hello there.
Hey.
And of course...
Wait a minute.
Well, hello there.
No.
Oh, you win. You win.
I'm going to overload between you guys and Jules. What am I going to do?
And, of course, we have...
happy.
We have Adam Smithy, who is the host of the Tropecasts, with us as well, and he hails from... Why do I keep thinking of the other comic? The Apple of Discord in Apple Valley. Welcome to the show.
Hello. So, starting with this, there's going to be a minor change to the nature of the Tropecast. Up until now, we've only been doing the EPs, which were the half an hour ones, and we're still going to continue to do those, but we're also going to... try out some longer format ones where we can tackle some bigger issues, and that way it doesn't feel like it's quite as forced, because I was listening to some of the ones that we'd done, and it kind of got to the point where yes, that's very nice, but we don't have time to talk about it because we gotta go. So we're gonna play around with this. We're gonna see how things work. But so today is, instead of an EP, let's call this one an LP.
Nice.
And in order to accommodate the larger time, we've stepped up our game a little bit, maybe gone to 11 just a smidgen. And today we're going to be talking about tropes that originate from Star Trek. That's right, we're doing Trek tropes. Now, we're going to try and tie at least some of these into webcomics, though this is a broader subject than just that, because this is also about writing, it's about creating, it's about being a fanboy or fangirl, and it's about having a good time. So, so I've been looking at the tropes page. Now, of course, most of these come from the seed of all evil, which is tvtropes.org. I don't want it to just be like, you know, hey, this is the Tropecast. Let's read the pages on TV Tropes to you. I mean, this is not an audiobook, right?
Right.
So the TV Tropes is a good resource, but I don't want it to just be gospel, you know? So, let's start with a good broad one that I think everybody's pretty familiar with. And this is actually what got the Trek trope suggestion started in the first place, which is red shirts.
Oh, man.
I mean, who doesn't love a good red shirt?
They're
right.
They're
stunning.
Valuable.
Okay, so does anyone want to explain what the red shirt entails? What kind of trope it is and what it means?
Oh, I'll tackle this one. So the red shirt.
Get it, Roscott.
Is the red shirt is a I don't know if it was how on purpose it was originally in Star Trek, but you got a character or a series of characters who is really only there to be the person that can get killed by the slime monster or shot by the beam or die on impact or whatever. There's always that guy or guys or girls. Hey, no judgments. And they really just, I mean, they're extras, and then they get treated like extras normally within the first 5 minutes.
I think my favorite was the guy that got turned into a styrofoam cube and then squished. That was classy.
That was the female yeoman. The guy survived.
You know,
that's why Kirk looked all sad.
Yeah.
Like, webcomics has done such a good job of playing with the idea of that. There's been characters that have been introduced as the red shirt, and then they're the only one that survives. There's characters that are introduced as, or there's entire shows or webcomics that follow red shirts around. I mean, there's so much good stuff out there. It's such a great concept of someone that knows that they're doomed for death.
Well, the originally, I think the red shirt, it wasn't intended originally to be a symbol of this guy's in red, he's totally going to die horribly. It was just that was the rank of officer that usually went on away missions. I believe their security or their...
almost always security.
But they're ranked. Yeah, sometimes an engineer, you know, they were the rank of officers. They were that class, not rank, class of officers that usually got sent on away missions, and as a result, they died horribly. Tubularly.
Well, there is a sister trope to this, which is called the Worf effect, which comes from Next Gen. And both the red shirts and the Worf effect are basically gauges to show the audience how dangerous an enemy is. The red shirt is you throw disposable good guys at it, kind of like the opposite of when you've got a whole bunch of ninjas storming the good guys and they kick their butts to show how good the good guys are. Well, the red shirts are like the opposite of that. This is, you know, that strange pollen coming from the flower isn't just there because it smells pretty. It's going to melt your face off. We need to show you that it's going to melt your face off. And of course, the Worf effect is the same thing, except where you do it with somebody who's not going to die, or very rarely does. But, you know, it's like if you watch Next Gen, Worf gets tossed around constantly for being one of the big bad, you know, badasses of thing. You know, any alien suddenly appears on the bridge, the first person they punch is Worf, and he always goes flying. And that's to show really you...
It's a really tough alien.
It's also just good military strategy. You take out the one that looks like he could kick your butt first.
Right.
I think my favorite red shirt moment is from Next Gen, actually. Oh, it's the most obvious. And that's the episode where... by this point, Wesley is the navigator or whatever.
Damn it, Wesley.
And Wesley, for some reason, isn't at the helm, but they have some no-name red shirt there. And, of course, the alien force kills the guy sitting in that chair.
There, but for the want of a shift change, go we.
Yes.
Oh, no. But that hits upon my favorite, which is the guy sitting at the helm. Like... why is it that they can't build these things so they don't explode? Like, the helm is constantly exploding, and people just end up flying.
There are no circuit breakers.
Yeah, you can build flash shields or something, or just build it with not exploding components. Like, maybe you don't want to do all the water shielding with C4. Maybe.
You don't understand. There's so much power coursing through these panels, and Duotronics don't have circuit breakers. They have to explode.
It doesn't help that Utopia Planitia uses only union construction workers.
Bastards. Yeah, I'm on my smoke break. Rewire that bridge panel.
But this is now, if you want to flip this on its end to show somebody who it was a very nice subversion of this, the classic Star Trek like genre spoof Galaxy Quest.
Oh man.
They had like all of the crew of the Star Trek type show that showed up at a convention get abducted by aliens, including the random generic ensign guy who people remembered for his horrible death in one of the episodes. And he spends the entire movie having a slow boil panic attack because he's the only one that wasn't in the opening credits. He's the only one that isn't like a regular on the series. So he knows that he's going to die. And
he keeps saying, "What's my last name? I don't have a last name. I'm going to die. Oh, no." Do you guys have a last name in the show? You're totally toast.
Did you guys ever watch, I swear this relates. Did you ever watch Buffy? Because Willow's girlfriend, she wasn't in the opening credits for a long, 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 long time.
Oh, yeah.
And then the one episode, they put her in the opening credits, and then they kill her off. That episode.
It's been firmly established that Joss is a horrible human being who loves torturing his fans. I mean, yeah. That's...
But better question, do his fans deserve to be tortured? Because they can get pretty annoying.
Hey. You're talking literally to a card-carrying brown coat. I apologize for my nerddom, but I think we're all masochists, is what it is.
I gotta ask a question real quick. I've not been exposed to this term, so I don't know what it means. What's brown coat?
Brown coats in the Serenity universe. The brown coats were the Resistance. So, like Mal, the captain, was a brown coat. So fans of the whole Firefly Serenity thing call themselves brown coats.
Okay, so it's not
I'm
really
sure
it's
there,
not
there is an entire group of people at PenguinCon who will be happy to abduct you and talk to you at length about what a brown coat is.
All right.
And they won't be happy until you've joined their ranks.
Okay, now I got a question. Does this have absolutely nothing to do with brown shirts?
I would assume nothing at all.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what a brown shirt
is. I believe it's a political term, but we'll not go into that.
Oh, no.
I think that it may have been... There may have been an intentionally drawn similarity, but it wasn't designed to be like an analog. It was more of a, you know, like red coat, brown shirt, you know, the different sort of things like that where an article of clothing... Describes a person's
affiliation, fascist or black shirts.
Yeah.
Okay. And especially in this connotation, they weren't, they were an ex-military fashion. They'd been ousted, so any uniform that they had was, you know, it wasn't a military ranking kind of
thing. And they couldn't be in chartreuse coats because that would just be silly.
It is a bit silly.
We've gone on record and said all the bad guys wear hats. It is that simple. You're wearing a hat. You're a bad guy in Firefly. The end.
All right, moving on.
Yeah, moving on. I got a big one here. And we could probably do an entire show just on this one specific thing, though.
I think I know what it is.
Given the nature of it, we really, really should not. And that is the Mary Sue.
Mary Sue.
Mary Sue,
I was waiting for that. Yes, we need to do a we did do a show on this. It's okay. It's in the archives.
Well, I was talking as a trope itself,
right?
But now, very brief. You can go back and listen to the archive, but Mary Sue is a term that originated from a parody of Star Trek fanfic. Which had like the best and brightest ensign, the first youngest to get kept, just absolutely terribly written character on purpose.
It wasn't on purpose.
No, it was because she was doing a parody of all of the other people who do bad.
Yeah, but all the other people who do the bad things, they just did it first. The Mary Sue just put a name on it. She put a face on
right.
it. That's all it was.
But she was parodying them. It was her thing was not meant to be taken seriously. It's just she did such a good impersonation of them that it was taken seriously by everybody else who did bad characters like her. And it became the icon for it. It'd be like if Spaceballs wound up being the best thing remembered about Star Wars, you know, 100 years from now.
You know what? For Spaceballs is the best Star Wars movie since 1983. Yes, I said it.
What? Not even the Ewok movie?
Oh, fuck that.
I said since 1983, so that would include the Ewok movie.
No, the Ewok movie hurts me. No, they were supposed to be Chewbacca's. I get that you're cheap and you don't have cash, but come on.
Okay. And you want to sell toys.
Besides, wouldn't it be more expensive to hire an army of midgets anyway?
Apparently not.
Ask more money?
Apparently
no, these are small.
But anyway, so yeah.
Regular salaries.
with web comics, you're going to run into Mary Sue's all the time, especially the lower of a grade of comic you wander into. Drunk Ducks.
Well, in defense,
I'm looking at you guys there.
I'm going to briefly defend the people who write Mary Sue's in the only sense that a lot of these people are just inexperienced. They are writers who have not written a lot of stories. So most of the time, you write what you know, and you want to write a story that is fun and escapist. So to you, basically writing about yourself being the awesome 16-year-old ensign who gets laid by alien green chicks all the time is what you would know. And you just don't have the wherewithal to know that that's not okay. So you know what? That's just a sign of immaturity. That's all, as a writer.
And honestly, if you go into it unapologetically, unabashedly going, this is wish fulfillment. I have a horrible life. I wish my life to be awesome. I'm just, you know, and you can play it to the nines, at which time you can elevate a Mary Sue into like a magnificent bastard category if you do it right. It's just...
Or a good parent.
Sorry, what?
I said, or a good parody.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think it works
but
best
it's...
when that great character is the bad guy.
Yeah. as long as it's not, you know, really obvious. But
yeah, but no one likes that jerk that knows everything, you know? I mean, no one likes to know it.
And when you get the wherewithal to know that, oh, nobody likes this guy, I can torment him for my audience's amusement, that's a sign of growing as a writer. Boom.
Yeah. Or you know, it's this character and the character is perfect, and maybe they are the main character, but then everyone hates them because they're so perfect. You know, at least that's something interesting.
You know, and this, interestingly enough, bleeds directly into my next topic, the Wesley.
Yes. Got it. Nobody likes Wesley Crusher. Wesley Crusher is basically the Jar Jar Binks of the Star Trek universe.
Really? I don't think he's that bad. I mean, he got to make out with Ashley Judd.
Yeah, but he didn't actually get to make out with her. He just played a little kissy face.
Well, I guess depending on how sexually frustrated and angry you are, that would just piss you off more.
God, that made me mad.
Probably didn't really do anything for Ashley Judd either.
For her, it's a shame.
I made out with Wesley Crusher.
Oh, God. Now you're cool.
He's way cool now, and he's very nice.
No, Will Wheaton is cool and nice.
Okay. See, like a true fangirl, I have difficulty separating the two. Having met Will Wheaton, now I see Wesley Crusher, and I'm like, that dude's really cool. I forget. It's hazy.
I just know that he is an actor playing a part. I'm sure he is a perfectly nice human being, but the kid he played on the show was totally annoying and needed to be smacked.
All right, we got to take a quick break right here. Ross Scott has got to leave. Thanks for staying by for the first act.
Yeah, don't kill me on the away team, guys.
Okay.
But sorry, I got to go jump into a time vortex.
All right, see ya.
Hey.
Batu, Nikto.
All right,
and,
so we're
gonna- Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra when the walls fell. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, when walls fell, right? Right? Am I right?
And we'll be back right after these messages.
The Webcomic Beacon is hosted on a Rampage Network, a webcomics host and community at rampagenetwork.com. Don't forget, we broadcast live on Sundays at webcomicbeacon.com/live. Join our live chat room, have news reports or Becky art, transmit them to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. Questions? Dial our voicemail at 1-320-310-0922.
I've never heard of this guy, but he seems cool.
He's the head of the newscast.
Yeah, I know that, but like,
but like who else is he?
Who else is he? He has a webcomic called The System, where he takes like like those little characters you find on like bathroom doors and like other warning signs. He basically has a whole comic revolving around those types of characters and designs and warning signs, and makes comics out of it with whatever. And he also MCs a group called Super Art Fight, where it's kind of like if you've ever heard of Iron Artist, where you have usually a subject. Iron Artist is where you have like a subject matter, and then you have like a panel of artists that are all trying to make their best interpretation of whatever that's supposed to be. Super Art Fight is basically where you pit two artists against each other, kind of like it's like wrestling, and then it's like they insult each other and they try to screw up the other person's art while doing art. So it's like this combative art creation, and there is a title belt,
and it's brilliant
involved. So that's what he does.
Interesting.
Cool, yeah. And if you're curious to find out more about Roscott, you can go to the Webcomic Beacon homepage, where it's got a link to his site, along with the rest of our sites on the left-hand side, where it's got all of our info.
For now, anyway, before I have the site redone again.
Yes, your temporal mileage may vary on that one.
All right, we're
so
back.
Are we,
we are back.
Ready to jump back into the causal loop here?
Yes.
Okay. Anybody else got a specific trope they would like to go on, or shall I continue to keep going down my list of Trek tropes that I isolated as good examples of bad examples of examples?
I'm drawing a blank. Go ahead.
Yeah, let's just continue with
the
next one.
I did a comic about this a couple of weeks ago, which actually got a couple of people talking to me about it, and that was Growing the Beard. It's a point of growing the beard is it's kind of like the opposite of jumping the shark. Lots of people know what jumping the shark is. It's that point when a series has lived long enough that it has passed the point of its own sustainability and it gets stupid. Like when Fonzie jumps the shark on Happy Days, or when Drew Carey's company stops being whatever it was before and started being something else and half of the actors left. But growing the beard is sort of the opposite of that. And it's named for when Riker suddenly shows up with a beard. between seasons, because a lot of fans of Star Trek point that shift, the beardedness of Riker being a time when the series came into its own, when it was good. It wasn't fantastic, but it was okay before. But once you started seeing Riker's beard, then, you know, if you turn on a random Next Gen episode and you see Riker with a beard, you know that it's going to be at least okay. And of course, if you see Troy wearing a uniform, then you know that the episode's going to be really good. And if Troy's wearing like a skimpy see-through black thing, then you know that they're losing people. Same with Voyager and Seven of Nine, interestingly enough. The better Voyager was doing, the more clothes Seven of Nine wears.
Interesting.
I had never noticed that, but I'll have to look into this.
yeah, Troy's bust line goes up and down with the ratings.
It's the bunnies.
What do you mean her bust line? What, like her
of her, her of neck? Her outfit? Yeah, her like the neckline of her. The neckline of her outfit raises and lowers with the tide of viewership.
The tide.
Ebb and flow. These are the sands of time. The sands of the hourglass.
Yeah, because that's why people watch a science fiction drama for the cleavage.
For the boobs.
Well, yeah, of course.
It depends upon the cleavage.
And
I'm sure Battlestar Galactica got a lot of interest because Trisha Helfer is amazingly gorgeous. So let's not put it past the fans.
I mean,
they're
I remember
not
when
are just horny people.
I remember when Sci-Fi Channel added a porn star to First Wave to try and firm up their sagging ratings.
Ouch!
Oh, analogy.
It didn't work. I'm sure it happens to every series now and then, but okay.
Let's move to the next trope then. I just kind of threw open my mouth a little bit.
I have one.
Okay.
And I think I've mentioned it before on the Beacon, but this one is the theory always proven true.
Oh, God.
And that says, and it's especially a next gen thing where a situation comes along. And they're in a tough spot, and they need to come up with some way to fix the problem and save the ship. And, you know, Data will say, there is a theory, Captain, that says if you PC, it could work. And the captain says, make it so, Mr. Data. And then, of course, they do it, and it works every time. And as anybody who knows anything about anything knows, a theory is an educated guess. So it could be wrong, but not on next gen, ever.
Yeah, you'd never get to see them like, okay, well, that didn't work, and now we're worse off than before.
Now, yeah, that didn't work. Panic mode.
You never see the, like, you know, last minute thing where it's like, all right, all we need to do now is point these three shields at one another, and it'll create an impenetrable barrier when the asteroid will just bounce off the planet, and then the asteroid punches straight through the shield, and they're like, we need to beam up now! We need to beam up now!
Yeah. All right. We have a correction from Tanis, and she's having some audio issues. She's saying, no. A theory is not an educated guess. A hypothesis is an educated guess. And then she laughs, and she goes on to say, as soon as she presses enter, theories are based on known facts.
But they could be wrong. Not on next gen. They're always proven true. Every time. Always. Always.
Alrighty.
Why don't we and revisit the red shirt topic and talk about the mauve shirt?
This is basically
the mauve shirt. Now, let me explain. A red shirt is a guy who basically goes on a mission and dies hard. He's supposed to be human fodder. But a guy who's a mauve shirt does what the guy in Galaxy Quest does, who he looks like cat and fodder for a while, but the audience likes him so much that the writers keep him on as a regular cast member, and therefore he becomes the mauve shirt. It's off-red.
Could you name an example of a mauve shirt? Who would that be? Kyle, the transporter chief, maybe? Leslie, the security guard?
Oh, how about...
Well, like I said, the guy from Galaxy Quest was that. Let's see. I got one. Go ahead.
Calm Meany's character in Next Gen, and then on to Deep Space Nine. O'Brien.
Yeah,
He was a gold shirt, which in Next Gen was the equivalent of the red shirt. But he just started out being the guy running the transporter and showed up often enough that eventually they gave him a name, a title, a girlfriend
title
that became...
A family. Became a regular series character.
Isn't that an ascended extra, though?
Well, it's an ascended extra, but it's an ascended extra from a precarious position.
Because remember, we already gone over this. Panels have a way of exploding horribly on Next and Star Trek. he's on that transporter bridge. Oh, man, there's a lot that can go wrong.
Maybe if we didn't make the insulation out of C4. But again, it is just a theory.
Duotronics. Yes, Duotronics brought to you by the Empire. With all the safety and quality control that that implies.
Oh, yeah.
Just saying.
But, I mean, with...
Well, I thought it was
with
fun.
Web comics, there's a lot of opportunities for the Ascended Extra / Mauve shirt. Because, you know, artists are lazy and have a tendency to have a almost unhealthy obsession with their own canon sometimes, and the guy who gets drawn into the background 3 or 4 times or is one of the disposable enemy soldiers that you just happen to take a liking to the way that you draw him may show up 2 or 3 times and then get promoted through the Klingon promotion, which is another Star Trek trope.
I did this because towards the end of the Briefcase series, there were these two guys, Agents Manta Ray and Dogfish. They were just supposed to be cannon fodder, but as the story just kind of kept written, I was like, well, we wouldn't just completely ditch these guys in the desert. So they just kind of came along and became sort of, well, I wouldn't say important cast members, but they came pretty okay support. So, I actually remember doing this. And it was mainly out of convenience because it made sense to have these guys you were smacking around, keep them around for the next assignment.
So the Monarch's henchmen in Venture Brothers.
The particular two henchmen.
That is another example, and that's another side of the Mauve shirt as well. That if you want to show how for serious something is by killing somebody off, and you don't want to kill one of your regular cast members off, you could deliberately promote a red shirt to a mauve shirt just so that the people start recognizing them and realizing this is, you know, a regular character who's been in here, so that it actually has meaning when they die as opposed to just being, oh, what a senseless waste of life. Let's step over the body and keep going.
I got a question. Okay, because there's two. I forget which are the two main characters. I mean, they're supporting characters, but they are still henchmen. They're the only ones that have names, except for Speedy, which is in like the
21 and 24.
21 and 24. But then there's Speedy in the second episode, because the first episode I'm counting as a pilot, and he wasn't in that one. But Speedy is like this very enthusiastic person, guy, and he gets killed when he's trying to do. Get that promotion, trying to look up it. Is that a relative trope?
The Klingon promotion?
No, like, because Speedy was, you know, I guess they were trying to set him up as a supporting, but he was only built up basically to be killed off.
I'm sure it's in here somewhere.
Okay.
Everything is in here somewhere.
I'm not trying to... Yeah, okay, I'm derailing, I guess. Never mind.
No. Okay. It's just
Klingon promotion. What is a Klingon promotion exactly? Okay,
basically, a standing rule on the Klingon ships is the best way to get a promotion is to honorably kill the person who holds a rank at least one above you, because when somebody dies, everybody gets promoted. So it's a, because there's, you know, I mean, there's only a finite number of ships, so there's only a finite number of captains and first officers, and if you're holding out for that, it's a lot easier to, I don't know, arrange somebody to step into a transporter and be beamed out into space without anybody noticing than it is for them to actually build a new ship. So the Klingon promotion is a method of career furthering your own career.
Furthering your own career by getting somebody else's and life as well.
Yes. Yeah, the Klingon promotion is basically somebody ahead of you dies and everybody moves up one.
Okay.
And you know that one has roots in reality too. I dated a girl back in high school who she was the like 16th or 17th in line for the throne of a kingdom that no longer existed after World War II, and they redrew all of the lines. I don't remember which one it was, but she act like everybody in her family actively kept track of how many people ahead of them there would be before they were the king or queen of the country that no longer exists.
But
because
if it doesn't exist, who cares?
Apparently,
I don't know. Maybe
let them. They lost their country. Let them have their counting.
Okay.
Yeah, because it was a
oh shit.
But I mean, it was just a yes.
Okay, we're still recording.
Okay.
Right. Go ahead.
It was a kind of a funny thing when they had the so and so's aunt died and we've all moved one step closer to the throne.
Woo!
Or the inheritance.
All right. Who here liked Captain Kirk?
I liked Captain Kirk.
I liked him. He's kind of a dick, but yeah.
How did you feel about Captain Kirk's death?
I hated it. Because
it was
crappy.
Kind of silly.
And it was
it
Rick
kind
Berman.
Of didn't make sense. And there was no reason why Picard had to be there. It was kind of silly.
It was pointless.
Yeah, Red Letter Media has an excellent review on all the Next Generation movies. If you ever thought you liked any of the Next Generation movies, you should feel ashamed for yourself after you watch Red Letter Media's reviews of them.
Yeah. You will definitely feel like, oh no, oh, he's right. Oh man, oh, now I feel dumb.
I'd say the biggest fault with Next Generation's movies is the significant lack of nuclear vessels.
That was it, as opposed to all the plot holes and stuff.
Oh well, yeah, that too. But I mean, this is Star Trek. The plot holes are all explained away by science that they never explain.
I thought that's Doctor Who. In Star Trek, there's always a theory to explain it. In Doctor Who, it's just I'll explain it later.
And then he never does. No, but back to Kirk.
Yes.
There is actually a trope called Drop Day Bridge on him.
What?
Which is a way to, in a very anticlimactic way, but in also a very final and real, and there's no question as to whether or not he survived this, kill off a character without there being a lot of emotional context to it. You know, it's not like a sad, not necessarily a sad moment. You know, it's not he's dying of terminal cancer. And it's not one of those where there's a question whether or not he could live. Like if, oh, say he fell off the bridge instead of the bridge falling on top of him. It's just a way to get rid of a character whose time has come in a way that there is absolutely no question as to whether or not people are going to try and bring him back in, you know, a sequel or their own series of novels that they wrote because they can't let go of things. not that Shatner didn't. In fact, Shatner apparently refused to be in. Shatner was given the opportunity to be in the new Star Trek movie, but it had to be as a recording to his younger self because by the time Spock diverged from the timeline for the new movie, Kirk should have long since been dead. But he wanted to be in it like up there with Spock running around, you know, as the old men, which would completely have destroyed the continuity because he was dead. But that's, they actually have a trope just for the unceremonious killing off of a character that needed to die and they didn't want there to be any question about, but they didn't really want to have to do a lot of, like, emotional work for it.
Yeah. Like when they killed Brody on Sequest.
Yes. That's another good one.
Yeah.
Or I guess Sasha Yar would kind of qualify, wouldn't she? Because
yeah,
she
kinda.
Just shows up. Yeah, I mean, she's like, hey, there's a monster. Dead. I'm like, wow, just like that, huh? Okay.
Sometimes these come up because of, well, let's say, contract disputes, money disputes, and as with, I guess, with Tasha, it was ratings. I don't know. I guess I always kind of liked
her.
She
kind of wanted to leave, she said.
Oh,
anyway, she wasn't happy with the character.
Okay.
Yeah, and the this is the on-screen version of the killed off-screen, which is where, because they couldn't get the actor to come back, something horrible happens to them without them being involved.
Transporter
and
accident.
Then later, their identical brother.
Yeah.
Turns up, you saw that in the V television series when I think it was, what was his name, Martin was killed off, and then he came back.
Well, yeah, because Tasha Yar didn't do that at least once, twice.
All right, we have to take another break.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was twice.
She came back as the Vulcan, and she came back in Yesterday's Enterprise.
Right.
So she became her own mother. Weird, in a way.
What? I'm my own grandpa. There's got to be a trope for that.
Time travel. Gotta love it.
All right, time travel. Ooh, that'll be another fun episode. Anyway, we have to go to break.
Okay.
So I'm going to try to find a fun song to put in for our break song. And when
Actually,
we come back,
why don't you try and find Tanya?
No, Tanya said she'll let me know. All right, we'll be right back.
They dropped a bridge on him. They dropped a bridge on him.
My name is Zachary Quinto. I'm an actor for hire, but you probably know me as that villain Siler, a psychic psycho on the hottest show on TV.
Save the cheerleader, save the world.
Was in my dressing room just flipping through the stations when I got a phone call from J.J. Abrams. He told me he had a brand new old role for me.
Did you get lost?
I took a walk down where the sun is hot, down Melrose after the Paramount lot, to a spaceship set labeled with the letters NCC
1701.
After a quick audition from this hip young actor, they could see I was so much better than Shatner, not to mention my resemblance to a 20-something Leonard Nimoy.
Highly logical.
I'm gonna trade this life for adoration for years. Had him cut my hair and change my ears. So now I'm just gonna be a big Spock star. With my flawless logic, I'll boldly go far. My ears will be pointy and my blood will be green. I'll say fascinating and I'll steal every scene. And I'll mind meld if they start to flinch. I'll just take them out quick with a fast neck pinch. James T. Kirk thinks it's all about him, but we know who was everyone's favorite Vulcan guy on the show. And I'll, hey, I'm gonna be a Spock star. Hey, I wanna be a Spock star. I wanna be great like Kirk without the human hassles. He has bones if he can set him up with Nurse Chapel.
Damn it, Jim! I'm a doctor, not an escort service maitre d'.
Is that a tribble in your pants, Jim?
Uhura screens my calls from Han and Chewbacca. I'll take Chekhov's stash of some of that Russian vodka. I'll send Sulu and Kumar to go get some White Castle for me.
What would Neil Patrick Harris do?
Scotty's knocking back the scotch and feeling no pain, cause he thinks he's fighting zombies.
Off the friggin' chain!
So now I'm just gonna be a big Spock star. With my flawless logic, I'll boldly go far. My ears will be pointy and my blood will be green. I'll say fascinating and I'll steal every scene. And I'll mind meld if they start to flinch. I'll just take them out quick with a fast neck pinch. James D. Kirk thinks it's all about him, but we know who was everyone's favorite Vulcan guy on the show. And I'll pick up chicks in a Ferengi bar. Some Orion slave girl when I'm having pot far. From in my quarters you would see how the girls desperately cling onto the starboard bow.
Oh, spark it to me.
Hey, I'm gonna be a Spock star. They're gonna write the scripts however they want to. Change the universe like they have the power of Q. Gonna retcon every single thing you know. Just like a Transformers G.I. Joe. So now I'm just gonna be a big Spock star. With my flawless logic I'll boldly go far. My ears will be pointy and my blood will be green. I'll say fascinating and I'll steal every scene. And I'll mind meld if they start to flinch. I'll just take them out quick with a fast neck pinch. James C. Kirk thinks it's all about him, but we know who was everyone's favorite Vulcan guy on the show. And just screw all the fans of Deep Space Nine who've been waiting 10 years for Sisko's time to be on the big screen, cause they think they'll have a hit with the same old 40-something hero bullshit. Hey, I wanna be a Spock star. Hey, I'm gonna be a Spock star.
That was Spock Star by the great Luke Ski from The Funny Music Project at thefump.com.
But he's not really dead because he's Captain Kirk. It's all a fake. You know he lived.
One of my
under rocks.
One of my favorite off-screen deaths wasn't really a death, but it's the transition between Colin Baker and Sylvester McCoy.
Very cleverly tricksily done.
Yeah, Sylvester McCoy wearing a bad wig. For like 2 seconds. It's hilarious.
That's all it took.
Yep.
It worked.
Wait. What are you talking about?
Colin Baker wouldn't come back. Or told not to come back.
No, he wouldn't come back.
He got jerked around so much, the poor guy. And so he wasn't going to come back to do the regeneration sequence into Sylvester McCoy. So Sylvester McCoy just had on a curly blonde wig and turned his face the other way, and they shot it that way. And oh, he regenerated.
What series is this?
Doctor Who.
Oh, okay. There we go. All right.
All right.
And we've wandered into an entirely different and significantly more screwed up fandom while we were on break. Now we're talking about Doctor Who.
No, we're not. We'll talk about Doctor Who tropes another episode. Right now we're at Trek tropes, but right now is we're going to have a little bit of news. I'm going to take a look here, and if you email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com, that's the email which you can get a hold of us and let us know about your milestones and such. We do have one comic, which this is the I forget what the comic was that this writer originally did, but Sanka No Sadness, which is at Sakana No Sadness, sorry, at sakanacomic.com.
His original comic was the artist, like, Monkey?
The Artiste Monkey. Okay, that's what it was. Because it was French, what the title was. And so that comic, the Sakana No Sadness, is hitting 1 year on February 1st, which is in a couple of days here. And I will let you know, so congratulations on that milestone. We don't have any more this week, but I do want to mention Yes?
I have one.
Oh, go ahead, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, no, the Apple of Discord passed 300 comics like last night. Now, it did it backwards because I was already like at 450, but since I'm purging all of the Apple Valley stuff out, the Apple of Discord sunk down to like 275 as of last night. So we passed 300 going the wrong way.
Wait, no, you can't do that. That doesn't count.
Yeah, I don't think that counts.
You don't. Well, once you reach 300, you don't get to do it again. In any case, we have a bit of news for those who kind of wanted to have their comic reviewed. We don't do webcomic reviews anymore. We will do webcomic mentions, or at least Becky will be doing webcomic mentions. She'll be tweeting webcomics that she likes, that she finds, or that are emailed to her. You can try your luck, I guess, at BeckyBeacon@gmail.com and follow her at BeckyBeacon on Twitter. Basically, she's going to tweet about assorted comics that she likes throughout the month, and at the end of the month, at the first show of the month, we will cover what she talked about the previous month, and so everyone will get a link and a mention on the show at least as well. So that's the closest to webcomic reviews we're ever really going to be doing on this show, just because it's kind of a... It's a bit of a pickle to go into webcomic reviews. I don't know if many people do them anymore.
Review my webcomic. Oh God! I mean, and what you end up seeing is just something, terrible. And you don't have the heart to say, "Well, your work is an eldritch horror. You might want to work on that." Yeah, no, I don't want to be in that position. Yeah. No, not cool.
And it doesn't necessarily mean that Becky thinks that your comic is bad. It's just that she's just picking the good, she's picking exceptional ones that she comes across to mention. So,
now, in relation to the Tropecast, I will say that if you tweet me an idea for a trope and we wind up using it, I will plug you at least once. And if it's a good enough thing, and if your comic is a great example of it, I may even forcibly drag you onto the Tropecast to talk about it. So,
possibly,
possibly, maybe.
Where should we have just people send trope ideas to Webcomic Beacon, or to what particular email or?
I love Twitter, so send them to the Webcomic Beacon Twitter address and send them to me. That's Callisti_X.
Change that name.
No.
Oh, come on. I keep getting you confused with like three other people.
Do you have any idea how long it took me to get like known as this?
Okay, I mean, it's fine. I know you as Adam Smithy, which sounds like an apple, which sounds a lot better than Callisti. Based off of...
It's what's carved on the apple. It's historical.
Okay.
It's Greek mythology. And led to the death of a whole bunch of Trojans. And, you know, that's how parties start.
So right? You're saying you're a horrible, horrible person.
Yes.
Okay.
But I'm not a wooden horse.
All right, so there is all that information, as well as Adam. I wanted to ask you, you had your webcomic health podcast for a while, or two episodes, three?
Yeah, there were two, and then there was a third one which got recorded right before my computer melted down. So it exists. Only now, in my memories at this point.
Now, what was the point of Webcomic Hell? What was the thing you were going for?
Well, originally it started out being that we were going to try to find like big problems that people ran into with webcomics and talk about things that they had done to overcome them. But I was going through a dark period, so it mostly wound up me trying to make other people cry.
If you had willing volunteers, do you think? I mean, really willing volunteers. Do you think you would ever do it again?
I might. I had Michael Poe on, and we talked about killing your own characters. You know, because he got a lot of interest and did several interesting things to his fan base back with. Exploitation Now, when he killed off like one of the main characters right before the end of the comic, and I don't even remember how, but we wound up talking about like ritualistically sacrificing various characters from DC Comics, and it just the webcomic hells didn't really. I don't know. I like the Tropecast though, so
alrighty.
I should not be allowed to pick the topics of discussion by myself without someone else moderating. because I would be like, so your comic is horrible and nobody reads it. How do you feel about that?
you find a dark place and you figure out how to make it even darker, I suppose. All right, so we still have some time yet for talking about Trek tropes.
And we were going to go over time travel tropes, so...
No, not now.
What?
Just Trek tropes right now.
I thought you were going over time travel tropes. Huh.
They do a fair amount of time traveling in Star Trek. I mean, back in the original series, they figured out if they did a slingshot around the sun faster than the speed of light, they would go through time. And then they subsequently forgot about it until like the next season when they needed to travel through time again. And then they forgot about it until the fourth movie. Which to me, you know, I have the power to time travel, but I'm only going to use it occasionally. The Borg, why didn't Next Gen ever, like, you know, okay, oh, we accidentally woke up the Borg. Yeah, I got an idea. Why don't we go slingshot around the sun and not do that?
Q did it.
Well, Q did it the first time, but actually, no, it wasn't Q. Q brought Enterprise to the Borg. However, at the end of the first season, there was a series of unexplained disappearances of colonies along the Romulan border, as if the colonies had been simply scooped up and disappeared. It was never deliberately stated, however, later on when they showed the Borg, they used the exact same description to indicate how the Borg were harvesting colonies. And the writers have confirmed that that first season mention before Q ever flung them to the other end of the universe was a deliberate foreshadowing to the existence of the Borg as close as the neutral zone.
Alrighty.
Wabachow!
So there.
So Adam.
Yeah. I got one. How about the mirror universe? Just like the universe you know, except slightly different. Like
goatees!
Everyone's evil and they have goatees. And there's an agony booth and people seem to be having a lot more sex here.
And the Spock beard.
Yeah. Way skimpier clothes here. Seems like not a bad universe.
Yeah, really.
Spock beard, the ultimate trope. To let you know the character is really not the real character, but an evil mirror version of that character.
And there's actually a
beard.
There is actually a trope on TVTropes.org, which is called Beard of Evil. Which is specifically for this. But yeah, the mirror universe is it's a fun narrative device because you don't necessarily, it's a neat way to explore the characterization by showing the polar opposite, that you don't necessarily realize, you know, how good the good guys are until you see them as the bad guys. And then you're like, okay, yeah, these people are insane. But it's also a great way for writers to just have some fun, like serious, just open up. And especially if they write a lot of like too good to be true characters and for whatever reason, like, you know, they have a prime time slot and aren't allowed to go too dark. Normally they can take the mirror universe into places that they would never be allowed to take their main characters, or they can even use it as a proving ground for some darker elements, like Buffy, for instance. They did the episode where Cordelia wished that Buffy'd never come to Sunnydale, which created in like an evil mirror universe where Willow had turned into a vampire, and Dark Willow was one of the more beloved like fan characters of that era of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. To the point where they had a second episode where they brought her back specifically just to play around with her some more, and eventually the real Willow wound up going in almost every single direction except Vampire that Dark Willow did.
I've never watched Buffy.
Okay.
Wow. That sounds confusing.
I have no comment.
It's just, you know, say, okay, let's take a different iconic character. Superman, right? Superman, you know, they've got the red kryptonite and stuff like that, so they can play around with the idea of an evil version of Superman. But, you know, and this isn't like the Bizarro world where right is banana and left is your elbow, and this is the same world. It's just, it's kind of a parallel universe sort of thing, but this one is specifically where the morality, you know, sliding scale has been reversed, where the good guys have become the bad guys. Optimus Prime wears purple, and you know, for an established series that's looking to mix things up a little bit, it's a fun way for a writer to be able to do some stuff they wouldn't never normally be able to do. And obviously it works. Look at how, I mean, you say mirror universe and Star Trek's like the first thing most people think of, even people who aren't fans of Star Trek.
Yeah. Has anybody ever done this trope where they actually kind of flip it around in that they go to the other universe and the bad guys are actually kind of good, or rather South one Park. Guy just stays exactly the same? Because if I were to do something like this, I would have to just have at least one guy just be exactly the same in the other parallel universe, just for giggles.
Well, I'm trying to think. This is a weird reference. I know this is a weird reference right off the bat, but I remember there was an episode of The Smurfs.
Oh, man.
Where there was like an asshole Smurf. I don't remember what his name was, but he was he was the antisocial needs to take his meds Smurf, right? And then Gargamel invented like a magical something or other that reversed all of their personalities. So essentially it created a mirror universe, but in this one. And so suddenly you had an entire army of antisocial surly Smurfs and one really positive one trying to help. This is, it has been played with a couple of times. I know,
South Park
and
South Park did it.
Oh yeah. South Park. South Park's a good one.
Good Cartman still had the beard.
Oh, we lost Jules.
Yeah.
Not only did Good still have the beard, but when it came time to send their universe people away, Kyle and Stan tried to keep Good Cartman and send their Cartman back with him.
Yeah, and it didn't work.
No, it didn't. Futurama. Futurama had, there was another bending unit, Flexo, I think, that looked exactly the same as Bender, but he had like a little soul patch goatee. So Fry automatically assumed because of the goatee thing that he was the evil Bender. It turned out that Bender was the evil Bender, and Flexo was the good.
Yeah, that's about right.
Okay, wonderful.
And I'm, yeah. So, but the mirror universe is just, I mean, even if it's just for your own sake as a writer, what would, if you completely spun the circle around 180 degrees, what would this character's polar opposite personality be? What would a world where all of my characters still exist, but they're the bad guys, or in my comics case, probably the good guys. you know, like, yeah, I pull no punches. the main cast of Apple Valley are all supervillains in the making. I mean, Dr. Hubris is named Dr. Hubris. I don't know how more blatant I can make it.
Evil Dr. Hubris. Anyway.
Well, then it's just redundant.
Of Doom, Ed of Doom. No, I'm just... anyway.
I got another quick narrative one. We got another time for one more quick narrative tool that people use. And this is a great one. This is a really handy one if you want to jump feet first into a story and you don't want to do a lot of explaining. The Captain's Log. Because nothing... I mean, it's lampshading. It is... I'm going to throw a bit of narration at you to set the scene, but I'm going to couch the narration in the context of the story itself, so that it doesn't seem like I'm just throwing narration at you. Because, like, okay, Star Wars got away with it with their big epic scroll at the beginning, and it became a trademark for them. You want to see a movie that did it badly? The original Dune.
Oh, yeah.
How many minutes of
diatribe?
How many minutes of narration over like matte paintings do you need to set up a sci-fi movie?
Or could you argue the original soundtrack with the narration of Blade Runner for that as well?
Yes. Yes, I can. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I was just watching that on Netflix Instant Watch, and Harrison Ford's voiceovers are tragic. Ugh, they are absolutely awful. So it's very good that in the later releases of Blade Runner, they took that crap out because it's so bad.
Highlander had an intro as well. The original Highlander.
Yeah, that's true.
The good one.
The good
one.
The one good one.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they did it in the source as well. Totally.
Greetings, Highlander.
Yeah. They totally fucked. Well, the source is another issue. By the way, if anyone who liked Highlander. I'd recommend not watching any other movie. But if you haven't seen The Source, and you love, you know, torturing yourself, you don't even need to watch the movie. You will feel utter pain just by watching Spoonie's review of it. And I'm going to probably put a link for it, just because it is so horrible. I hadn't even seen Highlander until, like, last month, but I've been watching these reviews, and I, who wasn't, like, a big fan of it because I didn't know much of it, I was like, this is shit! Anyway, that's off the topic, but I wanted to plug that.
I still don't believe it could be worse than 2, though.
It is.
I mean,
it is worse than Highlander 2. That is how bad it is.
Highlander 2 did have the shaving grace of having a Sean Connery in it.
Through a loophole bullet BS explanation, but yeah. Planet Zeiss. Moving on.
I'm back, Connor. I'm back because they decided they wanted me in the sequel.
They needed more money.
Now quickly go while I hold the ceiling fan up.
That is very good, actually. That's very good.
You know, I got it not from watching anything with Sean Connery in him, but from watching the Celebrity Jeopardy things on Saturday Night Live.
Oh my god, those were amazing.
Your mother!
I've got a riddle for you, Trebek. A conundrum, if you will. Yeah, it just...
Alright, I think the show's over.
But yeah, Captain's Logs... Real, just Captain's Logs. Not bad thing for a webcomic either. I mean, if you're going to have to throw some narration at people, at least you can put it in the context of the story now. One of the funny things about Captain's Logs, and you'll never be able to watch Star Trek this way, the same way again after I say this, pay attention to when they're actually recording these logs, because a number of them are impractical or impossible. I'm looking at the TV Tropes page, and they've got a couple examples, but there's a ton of them on here. Like, I know at least a couple of times Kirk has made a Captain's Log entry, during the voiceover where it's showing the ship and the planet and stuff like that. And then it cuts to him and he's tied up. Like how is he, you know, it's like, yes, by the way, I know I'm your captive, but can you hit record on my tricorder? I need to make a log entry. No, it's...
Oh, well, yes, it's, of course.
It's reverse narration. We're assuming that this is later, and then he's re-referencing it. So it, the scene is a flashback. Anyway.
Yeah.
That's the only way to reason it.
Yeah, the only way for these to really work out would be for them to, after, you know, they fly the ship at the sun, swing shot around it, and then while they're on their second time through and he's tied up, he's also in the other room going, Captain's log, I think I can see her underwear.
All right, I think we're done.
Yeah, I think we've reached an end here. So, track tropes. LP.
I'm not calling it an LP. It's just a regular episode.
Yeah. It's hard to... It's the thing with... To put a little summation cap on it here. Just not counting the number of tropes that actually apply to all of Star Trek. Just counting the number of tropes named for, explicitly named for, things that happened in Star Trek, there's over 40 of these. Just, you know, a couple of them we didn't even hit upon. Beam Me Up, Scotty. Green Skin, Space Babe. He's Dead Jim. Holodeck Malfunction. I'm a Doctor, Not a Placeholder. The Kirk, the Kobayashi Maru. Prime Directives. Rubber Forehead Aliens, Spock Speak, Straw Vulcan, yeah, Universal Translator.
Most of these are the original series, of course.
Yeah, most of these are the original series, but it's a testament to how deeply rooted this show is in our culture.
Yep.
And how much we, as creators of our own little universes, can learn from it, both in the good and in the bad. Like, for instance, don't do that thing Voyager did in that one episode where they traveled to the end of the universe and turned into lizards and, like, and Para Janeway had babies. Don't do that. Don't ever do that. Find that episode, watch it, remember it for the rest of your life, and never do that. So,
stay very suing. Pro tip.
Yes.
I didn't catch it. Please repeat it.
Pro tip.
Pro tip what?
No, the other thing.
I said don't write Mary Sue characters?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, don't do that, guys. If you think your character is really kind of a little too perfect, run it by a friend of yours. You know, run it by a writing critic or just somebody to let you know that, hey, you might be heading into Mary Sue territory. You might want to do something about that.
Anyway,
yeah, don't trust the guides online, though, because there's a couple of Mary Sue tests, and they have a tendency to be biased towards really bland characters. Like, there's no harm in your character having a backstory. What you don't want to be is the member of the fifth house at the Hogwarts that no one has ever heard of before, who's got silver hair and purple eyes and Harry Potter loves you. That you don't want to be. But having some backstory doesn't hurt.
Slash fiction is another topic altogether. But anyway, this is the end of the show.
Drop the slash fiction bomb and then run.
I have to because I have less than 30 seconds of this recording to get us going. So anyway, so that has been the Tropecast, and be looking forward, at least on the second Sundays of the month, we'll continue to do Tropecasts. If we have additional scheduling and programming for the Tropecasts, be sure to check out webcomicbeacon.com/calendar for when we schedule our future episodes. That is all for now. Thanks for stopping by. I've been Fess of TooManyThingsToList.com, and we've had Tanya, who had to bow out, of course, and she's from the Webcomic Beacon. Jules, thanks for coming along, and of course Jules is from ValkyrieSquadron.com.
check it out, especially next Thursday. We're going to have a nice drop for you.
And Adam, welcome. Thanks for coming together for this.
No problem. I was always happy to participate, hang out, stuff like that. Yeah, it's been fun.
Mark, thanks very much for coming from AutumnLake.com.
That's me.
Tune in for more at webcomicbeacon.com.
Shut up, Wesley!